Imagine it's a Saturday morning, maybe like 10 years from now.
Okay, setting a scene.
Right. So an AI algorithm has just finished writing your quarterly performance review for work. An autonomous vehicle is, you know, currently driving your kids to their weekend activities, and a smart appliance is brewing your coffee exactly the way you like it.
Sounds pretty nice, honestly.
I mean, yeah, it sounds great on paper. Everything is optimized. Everything is handled. But so what exactly are you going to do with your body today to feel like you actually matter?
Oh, wow. Yeah, that really is the defining question of the next decade, isn't it?
It has to be.
Because when artificial general intelligence, or AGI, when it inevitably removes the traditional meaning of work from our daily lives, we are going to hit a wall. I mean, when a machine can do everything better, faster, and cheaper than you can, we are going to hit a really profound crisis of purpose.
Which brings us to the core mission of today's deep dive. We're looking at this totally fascinating, highly ambitious, global project called the Everyone Sport, or E1A for short.
Right, E1.
Yeah. And if you are a new community member tuning in and you've been hearing whispers about this, or maybe you're just trying to figure out what the future of physical play even looks like, we're going to simplify this. We're going to unpack the core mechanics of this whole system for you.
Break it all down.
Exactly. We're going to explore what this virtual reality sport actually is, how you physically play it like, without completely destroying your living room, and why it might legitimately be a life raft for human connection.
And we are pulling from some incredibly detailed blueprints today for this deep dive. We've got the official E1 codex, the technical design documents for their primary VR game, which is called Racket.next.
Yeah.
Right. And we also have the founding manifestos from the Virtual Sports Association. And I have to say, when you look at these documents together, they don't just outline a video game.
No, not at all.
They outline a complete structural rebellion against how we currently do sports.
Let's actually start right there with the architecture of current youth sports. Because E1 is basically a massive reaction to it.
Oh, absolutely.
When you really look at how sports operate today, what the founders refer to in the documents as old sport, it is built entirely on scarcity. It operates like almost exactly like an ultra-exclusive VIP nightclub.
That is a great analogy.
Right, because there's this insane financial cover charge just to join a travel team nowadays. And then there's a giant bouncer at the door called tryouts.
Just checking your genetics?
Checking genetics,
yeah.
Checking early development, exactly. And even if you manage to get inside the club, the vast majority of kids just end up sitting in a waiting line. The bench.
Yeah, just watching.
Right, well, a tiny fraction of elite players actually get to, you know, dance.
It's an industrialized complex, and it's designed to filter people out, not bring them in. That's the reality of old sport.
Yeah.
And parents tolerate the scarcity architecture because of what the sources call the old bargain.
The old bargain, right. Yeah. Explain that a bit.
So you pay thousands of dollars, right? And you sacrifice your family weekends traveling to all these remote tournaments, and it's all to chase this college scholarship, or maybe an admissions edge, which theoretically leads to a secure job.
The golden ticket.
Exactly. But the Virtual Sports Association points out this really fatal flaw in that logic as we get closer and closer to the AGI era.
Because it's almost like we are subsidizing our own irrelevance.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, if the end goal of youth sports is a college degree, and the end goal of a degree is some white-collar job that an AI is going to just automate anyway, the entire mathematical equation of youth sports just kind of collapses.
The pipeline is completely breaking. And as that traditional structure fades out, E1A2 is stepping in to provide a replacement. And it's centered around something they call the human thread.
The human thread. I love that term.
It's brilliant. In a world that's increasingly enclosed by all these automated non-human systems, E1E identified the behaviors that remain strictly human by definition.
Which are
embodied physical effort, shared reality, and ritual. I mean, when everything else is done for us, sport becomes the last great thing we still actually have to do ourselves.
Okay, but I'm stuck on one thing here.
Sure. What's that?
If AI is driving my car, writing my emails, and doing my chores, I mean, human nature usually takes the path of least resistance, right?
True. We can be pretty lazy.
Yeah. I am probably just going to put on a VR headset and play a traditional video game on my couch, just pressing buttons to feel like a superhero. Why would anyone willingly choose to, like, exhaust themselves? physically sweating and grinding in some new virtual sport.
Because we are still biological creatures. That's the core of it.
Right.
A traditional video game where you are literally just twitching your thumbs, it doesn't fulfill that deep evolutionary need for embodied play and physical confidence.
So my thumbs get a workout, but my brain knows it's fake.
Exactly. The crisis we are facing isn't that people need physical exertion less. It's that the old field can just no longer serve them well enough. We still genuinely crave exhaustion.
Yeah, that makes sense. We want to feel tired for a reason.
We crave the visible recognition of getting better at a physical task. And E1E is engineered to capture that exact biological drive, but it totally removes those VIP nightclub barriers you were talking about.
It just strips them away.
Right. It strips away the financial costs and the geographic limits.
So that sets up the motivation perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
We are biologically wired for physical effort, but the old system is completely broken.
So let's actually get into the mechanics.
Let's do it.
How does this work for you, the listener, if you want to play?
The primary entry point into this whole ecosystem is a game called Racket Next. And it fundamentally changes the spatial requirements of a sport.
It really does.
Because you don't need a 100-yard pitch. You don't need a massive hardwood court. You literally just need a 2-meter circle of play.
That spatial constraint is the absolute magic of the entire system.
A 2-meter circle.
Yeah. By limiting the physical footprint to just 2 meters, the sport becomes universally accessible. You can play it in a small apartment, a driveway, a community center, whatever.
Okay, but if I am in a 2-meter circle in my living room and I'm swinging a racket around.
Yeah, you're worried about the furniture.
How do I avoid accidentally smashing my hand into a lamp or like tripping over the coffee table? Is 2 meters really enough space to get a genuine high impact athletic workout safely?
It actually is, and it's because of how the spatial tracking and the game mechanics work together.
Okay, how so?
So before you even swing, the software maps your actual physical room, and it draws a hard digital boundary. And the gameplay itself is engineered to anchor your core.
Anchor your core.
Right. You aren't sprinting across a room. You are playing out from a central pivot point. So you are lunging, squatting, twisting, and reaching, but all entirely within that fixed safe radius.
Got it. So you're planted, but you're moving your body around that center.
Exactly. You are standing inside what feels like this massive digital dome. You hold a real physical racket, and you are hitting a digital ball against these specific hexagonal tiles on the dome's walls.
And if you lose your balance or you step too far outside the circle,
the software reacts instantly. If your controller or your headset breaches that safe 2-meter boundary, the game immediately pauses.
It just cuts out.
It fades into a pass-through camera mode. So you instantly just see your real living room again.
Oh, that's smart.
Right.
So it forces you to stay centered.
Yeah, it physically trains your body to stay within the safe zone. So it allows you to channel massive athletic energy, like swinging as hard as you physically can, without the risk of physical collisions or the wear and tear injuries you get in traditional sports.
Okay, so it's safe, but you still have to actually be good at it. It's highly skill-based. You mentioned hitting those hexagonal tiles, the hexes.
Right, the hexes.
You have to clear score plates. And the design docs talk about these really advanced physical techniques like reverse racketing. Mm. What does that actually look like in practice?
Well, it means the game actually respects real-world physics. So reverse racketing isn't just some button combo you memorize.
Like pressing A and B at the same time.
Right, no. To pull it off, you have to physically change your actual stance, alter the angle of incidence on your racket face, and literally snap your wrist to apply digital topspin.
Wow.
Yeah, you're hooking the digital ball around a virtual blocker. The physics engine is tracking the velocity and the angle of your actual arm in the real world.
So instead of pressing a button to drink a magic potion or trigger a speed boost, your avatar only gets faster or hits harder if your actual physical heart rate and muscle output are optimized.
Exactly.
You are the engine of the game. The documents phrase it perfectly. They say, your stamina is your mana.
Yes. Your stamina is your mana. That phrase is basically the heartbeat of E1. There is no artificial mana in this game.
No shortcuts.
Zero shortcuts. You only progress through the game by becoming physically better in real life.
That's intense.
It is. You go from just barely managing to hit a hex at all to hitting it and kind of controlling the rebound to eventually targeting a specific millimeter of the hex to maximize your score multiplier. It tracks real, undeniable physical progression.
And it isn't just you playing wall ball all by yourself either. They have multiplayer modes, right?
Oh, yeah.
They essentially took the dynamic of table tennis or squash doubles and slammed it into this high-impact VR dome.
That's exactly what it feels like.
You are competing or cooperating with people in real time.
Yeah.
But what really stands out to me in the sources is the time commitment. A standard session is exactly 20 minutes.
That 20-minute cap is a very deliberate structural rebellion against old sport.
Because it respects your time.
Right. The founders call it a return to family freedom. Because think about those stolen weekends we talked about. Driving 3 hours to a soccer tournament, sitting in a folding chair all day.
Paying for overpriced hotel rooms.
Yes. All just for your kid to play a total of maybe 30 minutes of actual game time.
Right.
In E1, you put the headset on, you get a maximum effort, sweat-drenched workout for exactly 20 minutes, and then you take it off and go have dinner with your family.
You can play anytime, anywhere. And they even built in a level editor. So individual players or entire federations can design their own unique play domes.
Yeah, the customization is incredible.
It makes the sport endlessly customizable, but it's always staying grounded in that safe 2-meter circle.
Which actually brings up the most fascinating leap in their design, I think.
What's that?
So we have the players sweating in their living room, but a single player in a 2-meter circle could feel incredibly isolated, Frey. Where's the team spirit? Where's the camaraderie?
Yeah, if you're just in a headset by yourself.
Right. E1 solves this through what they call the New Field Initiative.
The New Field Initiative.
Yeah. See, old sports are constrained by finite physical fields. A baseball diamond can only host one game at a time. 10 kids play, everyone else watches. But E1 operates on the concept of one global field.
It is literally the internet of sport.
Yes.
You have millions of people playing separately in their own homes, but they all belong to the exact same continuous game. And because the field is infinite, the team dynamics completely change. Teams have absolutely unlimited sizes. There are no roster limits, and there are no cuts.
But, and I know you're going to ask this introduces a massive design challenge.
Oh, a huge one. Yeah. Because if the team has unlimited players, and there are literally millions of people playing around the world, how does an individual player feel like they matter?
Right.
If I am just player number 4,000,012, doesn't my 20-minute score just become a totally meaningless drop in the ocean?
It's the first thing everyone asks.
Because I'm imagining a scenario where I log in, I play my heart out, I'm sweating, but LeBron James is also on my team.
Right. He's just crushing your score.
Yeah. How does this system make my everyday effort matter just as much as a pro athlete's raw talent? Because if it doesn't do that, we are literally just back to the VIP nightclub where the elites dominate and everyone else is just a spectator.
This is where E1 utilizes AI to fundamentally change how we value athletic contribution.
Okay, tell me about that.
They use AI to normalize scoring. So instead of just rewarding the elite athlete who scores the highest absolute points, the system establishes a baseline for your specific biometric output and your personal skill level.
Okay, let's really break that down for the listener.
Mm-hmm.
How does that normalization actually work under the hood? Give me an example.
Okay, think about a 15-year-old track star and a 65-year-old grandmother.
Perfect.
Right. So if the grandmother consistently hits, say, 80% of her personal maximum physical effort during her 20 minutes, and she improves her racket accuracy by just 2% over a week.
The AI sees that.
The AI algorithm weights that personal progression heavily. Her 20-minute session generates a normalized score that contributes significantly to the team effect.
Okay, I see where this is going.
Right. Meanwhile, if that 15-year-old track star is just coasting, playing at like 40% effort and not improving their mechanics at all.
Just phoning it in?
Yeah, phoning it in. Their absolute point total might still be way higher than the grandmother's, but their normalized contribution to the team might actually be lower.
Wow. So showing up, putting in your own personal maximum effort, and just being reliable.
Mm-hmm.
That is mathematically rewarded on the exact same scale as elite genetic talent.
Yes. The system actually measures everyday reliability and personal improvement. One solo player, regardless of their age or their physical limitations, genuinely helps lift their massive team's total.
It is such a huge paradigm shift.
It shifts the entire culture from only the best matter to everyone who puts in the effort matters. The Codex even highlights this with their first 1,000 members. It specifically says they were not chosen because they were the best. They are remembered because they showed up first.
They showed up first. That completely inverts the old sport model where you are just constantly judged and ranked against everyone else's genetics.
Absolutely.
And to protect this entirely new model of participation, the sources outline a governing document. It's called the Children's Bill of Rights for New Sport.
Yeah, the New Field Initiative isn't just a software platform. It is designed from the ground up as a new public interest institution. And this Bill of Rights has 8 pillars. It guarantees affordable entry, so wealth isn't the gatekeeper anymore. It guarantees physical safety, which we talked about with the 2-meter boundary.
It also guarantees something called data dignity.
Yes, this is crucial.
Because if you think about the internet today, apps and social media companies just harvest your biometric data, they track your habits, and they sell that information to advertisers.
It's awful.
It is deeply exploitative. But Iwanyi's Bill of Rights legally prevents that. It promises privacy, transparency, and actual respect in how families' data is handled.
Exactly. The goal isn't just to get kids in headsets so they can be monetized. It's about trusted participation in a system that doesn't view them as a product to be sold.
Which naturally leads us to the final and maybe the most difficult piece of this whole puzzle.
A rollout.
The rollout. We understand the mechanics of the 2-meter circle. We get how the AI normalizes scoring on this massive global field. But how do you actually launch something this ambitious?
It's not easy.
No. You don't just buy a Super Bowl ad, drop a VR headset in a retail store, and expect the entire world to instantly adopt a totally new paradigm of sport.
No, you definitely don't. And their launch strategy is incredibly stealthy. They are actively avoiding loud, top-down marketing campaigns.
The strategy in the Codex is fascinating. The directive is, start where no one expects the network to begin.
Right.
So they aren't launching in Los Angeles or London or New York. They're starting in Palawan, which is an island province in the Philippines.
And the logic there is just brilliant. Palawan is geographically isolated. It has very low market noise. So it allows the developers to learn, test, and iterate incredibly fast without a microscope on them.
Okay, that makes sense.
From Palawan, they plan to expand to the rest of the Philippines, literally using an entire nation as a live proving ground. Then they move through Southeast Asia, really leveraging the affordability of that 2-meter setup before spreading to the USA and eventually the whole globe.
So it's a ground-up swell.
The stated goal is not to look massive at the start, but to actually become massive before the traditional sports market even realizes what is happening.
To achieve that kind of viral, unstoppable growth, the founders outline a strategy of riding the energy of what they call the 3 existential big dogs.
The big dogs, yeah.
These are massive pre-existing cultural forces that already motivate millions of people around the world.
Yeah.
So the first is sport, which obviously provides the drive for competition, effort, team belonging.
Sure.
The second is religion, which provides this framework for deep meaning, ritual, and moral energy.
Mm-hmm.
And the third is MLM.
Multi-level play.
Multi-level marketing.
Yeah.
The second you hear that acronym, warning bells go off.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you immediately picture a pyramid scheme where someone from high school is trying to pressure their friends into buying a garage full of dietary supplements.
Oh, absolutely. Everyone has that reaction.
How does Iwanyi utilize MLM mechanics without being a total scam?
The architects of Iwanyi are highly, highly aware of that stigma. The Codex is very explicit about this. The directive is to, quote, ride the energy of the big dogs without importing their cages.
Without importing their cages, meaning what?
Well, the cage of a traditional MLM is financial extraction. It is an exclusionary, profit-driven pyramid where the people at the bottom, mathematically, must lose money so the people at the top can get rich.
Right, that's the scam part. So what is the energy they are trying to keep?
The energy is the invitation dynamic. Human beings love inviting their friends, their neighbors, and their family into a shared reality. Word-of-mouth network growth is literally the most powerful scaling mechanism on the planet.
That's true. If your friend tells you to play something, you play it.
Exactly. So when I mean imports that multi-level play, the viral spreading from neighbor to neighbor, but they completely strip out the financial extraction. They replace the profit motive with the purpose motive.
Wow. So they want the viral growth of an MLM, but without making you buy inventory.
Exactly.
They want the belonging and ritual of religion without the rigid dogmatism. And they want the physical effort and team dynamics of sport without the benching and the insane travel costs.
You nailed it.
They're essentially harvesting the pure motivational fuel of these massive human institutions just to scale a totally inclusive physical reality. People over profits, as the documents say.
It is a wildly ambitious blueprint for how we organize human effort. E1 is fundamentally a total rejection of the industrialized, highly exclusive nature of traditional youth sports. They are tearing down the entire scarcity model and replacing it with a 2-meter VR circle.
And inside that circle, your physical stamina, your actual sweat-inducing effort, connects you to a truly global team. where your reliability matters just as much as raw talent.
And by doing so, it attempts to provide a really durable sense of human meaning, physical movement, and belonging in a world that is rapidly moving toward AGI and the total automation of traditional work.
It's a lifeboat for human connection.
It really is.
So if you are listening to this, whether you're a parent who is just exhausted by the financial drain and the stolen weekends of travel sports, or maybe you're someone looking for a flexible fitness routine that actually tracks your real skill, or just a tech-curious learner watching the future of VR unfold, E1 represents a massive shift in how we might actually preserve our humanity when the machines are doing everything else.
It forces us to completely reevaluate what we value in physical competition when the barriers to entry are finally removed.
Which leaves us with one final, pretty fascinating question to think about as you go about your day.
Let's hear it.
If E1 succeeds, and everyone on Earth has access to the exact same infinite global field right in their living room, and if traditional genetic advantages like, you know, being 7 feet tall no longer define athletic success, will the global sports heroes of the future simply be the people who show the absolute most dedication to showing up, putting in the work, and lifting up their unlimited digital communities?
I love that. It completely changes the very definition of what an athlete even is.
It really does. Think on that, and we will catch you on the next deep dive.